It's All About Food with Karen Hartglass, Wednesdays at 3 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Karen Hartglass, and you're listening to It's All About Food. Hi, and happy July. This is a live call-in show, and if you have the opportunity and you have a comment and question, the number is 1-888-874-4888. And anytime during the week, you can reach me at info@realmeals.org. And it's another hour to talk about my favorite subject, food. And I have a special guest today, Ayinde Howell, and he is an entrepreneur, executive vegan chef, and founder of the website IEatGrass.com. Howell was born in Tacoma, Washington. He's a lifelong vegan who started practicing yoga with his family at the age of 10. He has a background in a variety of vegan fare, covering soul food, raw, and new American. It was in Seattle where he got his start as co-owner of Hillside Quickies Vegan Sandwich Shop, an offshoot of the family business. HQVSS became a popular lunch spot known for blasting hip-hop during the crowded rushes and being frequented by notable industry clients like The Roots, Saul Williams, Common, Blackalicious, and the Ekraya Badu, where their respective tours came through town. Currently, Ayinde is an executive chef and green entrepreneur consultant in New York City. While studying acting under William Esper at the William Esper Studio for Acting, he has appeared in a number of independent films, including Urban World, Waiting for Her, and White Lies, Black Sheep. Ayinde is also an accomplished DJ producer, and he's just a cool dude.
Wow. See,
what? Is he amazing?
That sounds like I'm ADD.
No.
I told you. No, yeah, I've definitely done a little. I mean, the through line has always been food, you know. I grew up
in. Yeah, there's consistent themes there. Not just food, but something I was thinking about earlier is, and I don't know if this is an American thing or not entirely, but the idea of being creative, creating new things, and being independent, and feeling that all things are possible.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, my mother used to tell us this thing when we were growing up. She'd always say, never say I can't, always say I can. And, you know, we tease her now because we're like, you told us that. And, like, that's just kind of the model that me and especially, like, my middle sister kind of take on. It's like, well, if I can't do it, I can figure it out. Mm-hmm. You know, and if it seems interesting, I'm going to go try that. And so, you know, it's always been like I'd be cooking during the day and then at nighttime I'd go be a poet or put
and
on
why
a show.
Not?
Exactly.
Why
makes,
not?
Exactly. Exactly. There's nothing wrong with that.
Absolutely. You know, I was just watching the movie. It's an old movie now, The Last Emperor, last night. And one thing that kept going in my mind as I was watching this poor little boy grow up to live in this secluded, forbidden city to become this emperor of, like, nothing at the time. They were just kind of keeping him going for tradition's sake. But I was just thinking of all of the people who have suffered because they were made to be one thing and couldn't really be who they really were.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I applaud you for that, and we're going to talk about some of those ADD things you've been up to.
Awesome. Well, you know, lately I've been trying to bring everything together. You know, there was a time when I wanted to keep everything separate. Like, okay, my artistic stuff is over here, and then my music stuff is over here, and my cooking stuff is over here. But what I realized was that the through line again has always been my being vegan, and like I see my lens is through that of being vegan, and so I'm always kind of, you know, from where I go out to eat to you know, going on a first date, or you know, it always comes up. So I was like, okay, so then I start. It does. It's like, you know, you go out to dinner and it's like, all right, I'll have the tofu, and it's always like, oh wait, you're what you're having what. Yes, I'm a vegan.
Yeah. I can really relate to that, and I want to talk more about it because I guess I'm a Renaissance kind of person, too. Mm-hmm. And I've had different career paths. I've been an engineer, and I've done quite a bit of classical singing, and yet I never really wanted to call myself those things. Mm-hmm. Like, am I really a singer, or am I really an engineer? You know, what am mm-hmm. I, and why we have to label ourselves? But right. one thing that has totally been clear to me, I haven't been a vegan since birth, like you are, and I won't definitely want to get into that, but... Uh-huh. The food thing, that's clearly been a big identity for me. It's a choice, mm-hmm. and it gets to my core for mm-hmm. so many reasons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that, you know, it's something that we do every day, you know, mm-hmm. 3-4 times a day. It was snacking in between, you know.
And when we eat like this, we can eat all day long.
Exactly. And I feel like it's... Nowadays, it's this growing popularity around food, and like people have kind of discovered that they can cook at home and they can actually make their food, so they don't have to wonder what that, you know, that nefarious middle person is, mm-hmm. you know, the slaughterhouse, the this, the that, whatever the case may be.
People are talking about it. It's nowhere near where it needs to be, but
right.
it's going back in that direction.
It's getting some headlines, I guess, and you know, I was listening to one of your older programs just talking about how. What a time it is to be alive, because there's a lot of change happening,
mm-hmm.
a lot of change happening, and to be a part of that, and like to be someone who's decided, you know, as an adult, all right, I'm going to stay vegan, I'm going to be on this path, and I'll you know, and then also make myself a resource, you know, for people who want to live this lifestyle and be on this path, and you know, I may not know the other side of it, but I know how to live it, and that's where, you know, where I try to lend my expertise, and where IEatGrass.com comes into play, and more with that, like I want to, I don't know, I want to like kind of take the stigma off of it too. Like being vegan has this.
It's no big deal.
Yeah, it's like, you know.
Well, it isn't, but it is.
It isn't in the overall scheme of things, because yes, you eat, you know, 3-4 times a day, but you also do a ton of other things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you live, you go to the movies, you listen to music, you play, you have fun, you do all these things. And people tend to think that, oh, you know, I've had people say, you know, also, oh, you can't do that, you're vegan, you can't.
Right.
You can't,
yes,
you know,
I can,
yeah.
I can do it all.
You can't vote Republican, you're vegan. Not that I'm a Republican, or if I voted Republican, I'm just saying, I've definitely heard that.
Yeah, well, Matthew Scully, the author of Dominion, is one Republican who
uh-huh.
has gone the vegan path. So we know that, you know, both, any party.
Yeah, it takes all types.
That's
indeed.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, let's just start at the very beginning, because
okay.
one of the things that I'm fascinated about,
yes.
you...
here we go.
...is you are one of the rare,
mm-hmm.
hopefully not rare for long,
mm-hmm.
but lifelong vegans.
Yes, yes.
And,
card-carrying member.
You know, I think, not that you should be a guinea pig, but people should be following your medical history, because there's a lot of medical evidence today that people eating a lot of plant foods, raw, locally grown, fresh,
mm-hmm.
etc.,
mm-hmm.
Are healthier than those that eat a primarily animal food-based diet.
Mm-hmm.
But what we haven't figured out yet, and I don't know that we ever will, and I'm not sure that it's important, but we have not figured out if you're better off eating entirely plant foods
mm-hmm.
or eating mostly plant foods with a little bit of animal protein or
mm-hmm.
whatever. That hasn't been clinically tested or proven or whatever.
Right.
And so, you know, how are you feeling?
I feel great. I feel really good. I balance my intake, you know, green leafy vegetables and some, you know, fried foods
you
and things
great.
Like that. Thank you.
Yeah.
I did yoga before I came, so I wanted to shine. But, you know, I'm about to be 33 this year, so I'm like, you know, I'm at that point where I have to, like, take care of the body, like, really focus on it and stuff. And I feel like, you know, if you just trust in the diet and if you do your research and find where you're going to get your omega oils, where you're going to get your iron, where you're going to get your protein, where you're going to get your calcium, all this stuff is plant-based. You know, one little analogy I like to use or give people is say, okay, well, we don't eat carnivorous animals. We eat herbivores. We eat
mm-hmm.
basically vegan, vegetarian animals. So, and when you feed an animal...
Well, I just want to clarify the ones that are supposed to be
right.
vegan.
Yeah, I was about to say, yeah, when you feed them meat, they get this mad cow disease comes
yeah.
along. But So they get their everything they need from nature. So you cut out the cow, you cut out the middle mammal, if you will.
The middle mammal,
okay.
I like that.
Yes, you cut out the middle mammal. And then you just get everything you need. You know? Like, so it's
more efficiently.
More efficiently, and it's an easy thing to say. But I find that, you know, there's so many more things attached to food. There's your emotional attachment. It's, you know, just what you do normally. Like, people are kind of programmed to go to the Safeway and get a package of meat and get a can of beans and, you know, some mashed potatoes in a box, and that's that. You know, but because that's what you've been shown and that's what you've been kind of inundated with. You know, if the status quo changes and everything is organic and everything is plant-based on a larger scale, and there, by the way, are plenty of reasons to do this. Number one being the environmental footprint that meat production has, and the fact that you could end world hunger by, you know, instituting a worldwide vegan diet.
Yep.
You could feed everybody with the food that you grow on the earth. Wow.
And have land aside to enjoy.
God, that is such a crazy concept.
It isn't,
nuts.
Isn't it? And you never hear it.
No.
You rarely hear it.
But that's possible, and that's out there, you know. And and I know that it's ebbing and flowing, you know, the momentum in the vegan movement. It's you know, you have, I like to say I'm a vegan for the human. You know, my parents started off because they wanted us to be healthy, and they wanted something different. You know, they grew up eating meat. They grew up, my father's from Alabama. Like, he mm-hmm. tells me stories about how he used to catch possums and eat them. Like,
well,
yeah.
how did they get onto this?
It started off, they were in the civil rights movement, and then they went into, like, this kind of new age spiritual thing. It was California,
right.
You know, hippie town, you know. They got into this kind of new age books and stuff. And then they discovered Rastafarianism.
Okay, very good.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And, you know, one of the tenets of that is being vegan and kind of having, you know, treading lightly on the earth and respecting your fellow
There's
man.
There's a lot of raw foodists that come out of that.
Mm-hmm. Rastafarian culture, the religion they believed in eating, they call it ital food, but it's taken from the word vital, so like vital food. So the basically staying as close to the source as you can, you know, lightly cooked, not a lot of salt, that sort of thing. You know.
Hallelujah.
Yeah. So there's, you know, I just did this post on religion and food, so it's all right there. Yeah,
fresh.
It's all right here, fresh. But yeah, so they became Rastafarian, and that's what we were raised in. But it was, you know, it wasn't an animal rights platform. It was more of a human thing, and it was the idea, you know, and consequently, like, we never owned pets, you know, because we just never had that relationship to animals. It was like an animal should be free. And my parents were like, no, we don't, you know, even though my, you know, they both grew up with dogs and whatnot, they're like, I don't really think we should own animals. And we had a garden, we had a flour mill. You know,
So what did you eat as a kid? When I was growing up on Captain Crunch, and if you even know what that is, horribly sugary cereal.
Yeah, no, I it's the funny thing is, like, my parents owned a convenience store in the neighborhood, which is like a half a block from where we lived, and they would try to sell, like, health food stuff and organic stuff, but it was just like, yeah, they were like, nobody wanted it, so they had to, like, sell, like, you know, quote-unquote regular food. So I was always aware of that. I always saw one thing, and I was like, but at home.
But didn't you want it?
No.
When? How did?
I don't know
how
why.
How did you do that?
I really don't know why, to be honest. And people ask me
did
all
you
the
go
time,
to school, regular
I was
school?
Homeschooled.
Okay,
I was
that
home,
helps.
Yeah, yeah, I was homeschooled up until high school. Yeah, I was a
right, and how about the television?
Experience.
Was that on or off?
The
or did
TV,
you have one?
We had one, and then we didn't. We went through... Oh, my God. We went through bouts of, like, TV. So, like, they would have one, and then they'd say, don't watch it. So then we, you know, then my sisters would, like, you know, they would go and watch soap operas and stuff. And then, you know, but they would allow us to watch, like, PBS, like, public television.
Yes, of course,
and
the cultured station.
Animal shows and things like
and
that.
And Sesame Street.
And that was pretty much it. That was all we watched, and, like, animal nature shows and stuff. And then, but every now and then, like, we'd watch... You know, we'd sneak and watch some stuff, and then we'd get in trouble for it, and then they, like, cut off the cord to the TV. But they had one in their room, so they'd be watching, like, Miami Vice one night, and we'd kind of sneak to the door and kind of peek in. So it was, but for the most part, no, we did not have a television.
How many siblings do you have?
I have two older sisters.
And are they vegan, too?
They are vegan, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I just want to interject about Sesame Street for a moment here. I was a big Sesame Street fan when it first came out a very, very long time ago. Uh-huh. I used to watch it with my younger brother. And There was one show that stuck in my mind for some reason, and I wasn't a vegan at the time when it stuck. Mm-hmm. But this was, there's one line in particular. They were talking about dairy cows, and they said that a cow gives much too much milk for her young calf to drink. I'll never forget that line.
Wow.
It was exactly that line in my mind. Uh-huh. Oh, okay,
right.
That's nice. And
right.
Then later on, you know, I learned about dairy cows and how in order to have milk, the cow needs to be made pregnant. The cow needs to have a calf, and most of the time that calf is ripped away at birth or the day after and grown either to be another dairy cow or if made into veal, and we all know the horror behind that.
Mm-hmm.
But that innocent little statement had so much to it that as a little child I didn't know. But for some reason it stuck with me.
No, I think that's key. You know, we were talking about advertising the other day with just my little crew. We were talking about, you know, rebranding, because we're rebranding iEatGrass.com.
Mm-hmm.
The new site will be up next week, but you can go to it now.
iEatGrass.com.
iEatGrass.com.
Mm-hmm.
And what we're doing, you know, she said, you know, I don't even know why I used to eat all those sugary cereals, you know, the Cocoa Puffs and the Captain Crunch. And she's like, but I realized it was that cartoon character. You know, that cartoon character that on the box, you
mm-hmm.
know, the flying bee
of
or
course.
The Tony the Tiger.
To
you know,
the kids.
Yeah. So she said, you know, it worked. It was just kind of automatic, you know. And one of the reasons why I think it's important for me to kind of be in the kitchen and be in the public eye as much as possible, because, you know, I can reach so many people with my restaurant or with my food, my pop-up restaurant or whatever the case may be. But everybody watches TV. Everybody's on the internet. Everyone's
mm-hmm.
in media. So the more that I can kind of delve into the media and into that world, and right now I feel like the most accessible is the internet. You know, it's still kind of wide open.
Yep.
As far as access and being able to put your ideas across and find a community. So once, you know, until they regulate it, you know, I feel like there's a lane there, and I feel like
there's opportunity.
Yeah, and if mm-hmm. you can kind of, I mean, they call it TV programming for a reason. It's like you have to kind of get your program across, like whatever it is that you're selling or that you're, you know, you're touting, if it's veganism or if it's the meat industry, the more eyeballs you get, the more people are going to do what you say. It's just kind of how it works.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's unfortunate, but that's just kind of how it works.
And we also need media balance, because
yes.
on the conventional forms,
yes.
aside from the internet, television and newsprint and magazines are just so overwhelmingly marketed towards bad products.
Yeah.
Bad products.
Yeah.
And on the Food Network, you know, when are we getting on the Food Network?
Right.
Healthy food, healthy, delicious food. When are we going to have fit, trim, attractive vegan people on the Food Network? I'm ready.
Right.
Hello. Sign me up. And what's fascinating to me is so many people don't even know where their kitchens are anymore.
Right.
And yet they watch the Food Network.
Right.
What is that disconnect where we're fascinated to watch how food is made, and yet we don't do it ourselves?
Yeah, I mean, I think the whole chef culture has kind of exploded, and I've been in many rooms, you know, auditioning for, you know, TV,
mm-hmm.
and it always comes down to like, well, but you will cook meat, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, no, that's kind of the whole point. Yeah, but I mean, you'd cook some fish, though, right? I mean, they ask you to, like, you know, what about cheese? What? I'm a vegan. What about vegan do you not understand? I'm a vegan chef, you know. But I can mention it now. I am on a cooking show on Bravo. I have an episode coming up.
Oh, good for you.
Yeah, it's called Rocco's Dinner Party, and it's airing next Wednesday the 13th at 10 p.m.
Excellent.
It might be the 12th.
I don't have cable, but that's going to be, I'm going to have to borrow somebody's.
Yeah, I'm just making sure.
That's okay.
Yes, it's the Wednesday the 13th on Bravo at 10 p.m.
Excellent.
It's called Rocco's Dinner Party. You can tune in. There's a vegan on Bravo.
Okay, so can you give us just a little? You can't tell us anything more about
it. No.
Okay.
No.
Were you happy with the way it went, you think?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because with those things, you never know how they're going to edit them.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, I just, what did they say?
Okay.
I
didn't have any explosive, crazy drama moments?
I can't talk about
that. Oh, right, you can't. Okay, I'm sorry. I have too many friends that have been on reality shows, and some of them didn't turn out too well. Okay.
Reality is a blast.
They're not real.
That's an opinion.
Yeah, that and is, it's my opinion, yes. And it's my show.
There you go.
Okay, well... so did you ever, as a kid, want any of these things that other kids had, or you just didn't have enough brainwashing exposure to it?
You know, I think part of it is I didn't have a lot of exposure to it because of the minimal TV. And then I had, like, you know, my parents would constantly cook. You know, we had dinner, like, almost every night. You know, we'd have somebody would be cooking.
Uh-huh.
You know, partly because they were experimenting to keep the lifestyle, you know, going. And because that was just their way. You know, they wanted to... If you kind of take apart the whole, you know, marketing aspect of the green living and all that you see today, like, it was done in a very organic way, kind of growing up. It was, with me, it was, you know, like I said, we had a garden. It was.
Did you know you were different?
Yes. I definitely...
Did you know you were special?
I definitely knew I was different.
And, you know, that can go either way.
Yeah.
That could really be empowering.
Yeah. No, I think growing up, I knew I was different because this is the mid-80s in a small town in America. And, you know, when everybody was, you know, it was McDonald's and this and that. And I was like, I'm a vegetarian. And they're like, what? What does that mean? And I was like, I'm homeschooled. What? What is 1 + 1? You're dumb. So it was like, it was a lot of like ridicule and stuff from kids, but just because they didn't know, you know. And I think that the one thing that I would change, you know, or recommend to people who want to kind of take that route, and I think it's more accessible now, and that is have the community. You know, that was, again, and not really trying to just plug the F out of my site, but that's why I created IEGrass, because it's like a community of like-minded people. And it's so important, especially because the only thing I really wanted as a kid was to go somewhere and meet somebody who was kind of like me. You know, I didn't really feel that until my parents took us on vacation to Jamaica, and we saw like other like Rastafarians, and they were like, and they got it, and they kind of understood it. And I was like, oh, this is cool. But then it was like, okay, but this is, do I have to move to Jamaica to feel this? But when I came to New York, my sister moved to New York first, and I started visiting. I came to New York, and it was
where
just
everyone's welcome.
Yeah, and it was just everybody. Nope,
here.
Not a second look. Vegan. Yeah, vegans over there around the corner.
Uh-huh.
You know, and it was just like, this is paradise. I have arrived. Never leaving. And so, yeah, I decided I wanted to, you know.
That's nice. Well, the thing about community, especially on the internet, is where it's really strong. And I think a lot of people that are discovering plant foods go to the internet. And I don't know about you, but I am always overwhelmed with how many people still don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And still need help.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm all about this community thing, too, and I have my new nonprofit, Responsible Eating and Living. The website is responsibleeatingandliving.com. Please go there. Please like us on Facebook. Please follow us on Twitter. And we just started this week, so we want to get, you know, a little viral action going.
Yeah,
but
there you go.
I talk to a lot of people, and I keep thinking, oh, people don't need this help anymore because it's just all out there. But so many people do need help. They need inspiration. They need encouragement.
Right. I think the disconnect nowadays is that people see that there is... You know, the curtain has kind of been pulled back. You know, you've had these movies, the Food Inc. and the, you know, Super Size Me and all various films of that nature that have shown these things that everybody kind of knows in the back of their head, but then you see it. And so the question now is, you know, people or clients will come to me and they'll say, well, what am I supposed to eat? Like, I grew up on meat and potatoes. Like, I want to eat better. What do I eat? You know? Or, you know, in you know, worse situations, people will come to me after they've left their doctor's office and the doctors tell them, you know, well, you can't eat meat anymore. And if you do, you're going to die, you know, because of cancer or such and such and so forth. And it's like, well, people are kind of dumbfounded. What do I do? I can't, you know, I can't do meat. I can't do wheat. You know, well, there's soy, there's quinoa, there's millet, there's...
There's a million
there's things to eat. Yeah, there's a world
there's
out
more
there.
Variety that they'll discover that they never imagined.
Right, but I think the key is, though, to find a way to, like, kind of ease them into it. Like, mm-hmm. ease people who don't know into it. Because it's just what it is. Like, people just don't know, you know. And if you don't vary from, you know, kind of the norm, if you don't go even to the international aisle in your supermarket, you know, you're just not going to know. And, like, a lot of people just, you know, it's the meat, the dairy, the
produce. It's funny because I talk about in a supermarket, there's really only a couple of places I go and I don't even see the other stuff. It's not even food to me, and it's probably the complete opposite with everyone else.
Right.
With
yeah.
all the meat and all the processed stuff in boxes.
Yeah, and, I, you know, a big part of it is just access, too. It's just it's about making things available. You know, fast food companies, McDonald's is highly subsidized. You know, they're able to get all these tax breaks and able to produce mass quantities of things at a very cheap price. So when you don't have that working for you, it's hard to compete at that level.
Right.
You know, there is a, you know.
Very hard.
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard to, you know, you can't play with the big boys if you don't have big boy toys. So you gotta, you know, you gotta get there.
If you can't get placement on a shelf to mm-hmm. for your products to be seen,
right?
That's a really hard thing, and yeah, it's hard overall.
Yeah, but I think there's hope though. I definitely think there's hope. Yeah, there's a movement of people who just know, and I think the generation kind of coming up under me, like, you know, people have much more of an awareness about what veganism is, and like what, even if they're not going to be vegan, or maybe they're going to be vegan once or twice a week, or maybe they're dating someone that's vegan, or maybe they, you know, they want to incorporate it into their diet just to do their part for the environment. There's an awareness that's mm-hmm. there, and there's so there's that'll only grow, you know, because one of the benefits of a vegan diet is A, you're going to feel better, you're going to have more flexibility, you're going to look better, your skin's going to look better. You know, and so if all else fails, you always play the vanity card.
Absolutely.
Like, you're
going to
look great.
That's right. You're not going to have a problem with your weight. You can eat everything that you want. I don't understand why more people aren't doing it.
Yeah.
But there's a lot, and we're going to talk about a lot more of them. But right now, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
PRN, the Progressive Radio Network. Philosophy Talk is changing to a new time every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Ken Taylor and John Perry discuss both contemporary and classical philosophical theories and apply it to problems we face every day with a lighthearted and laugh-out-loud approach. Philosophy Talk every Wednesday at 10 a.m. on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com.
Mike Fader here. Every Thursday following Gary Null from 1 to 2 p.m. Eastern Time, I will expound and expand on stories, both personal and public, attempting to make the sometimes ephemeral but always essential connections between our internal landscapes and our external lives. So please join me, Mike Fader, Thursdays from 1 to 2 p.m. Eastern Time for The Turning Point, here on the Progressive Radio Network.
Is a state of emergency. No, it's not. It's more of a state of urgency. I'm Danny Schechter. I'm your news dissector. I'm on the radio Fridays at 1 p.m. right here on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com, offering a different narrative to the news, challenging what we're hearing, what we're seeing, what we're reading, offering another way of understanding what's going on. Join me online on MediaChannel.org and join me here on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com Fridays at 1 p.m. Be there or be square.
Hello, everybody. everyone. This is Richard Martin, host of your bi-weekly wake-up call, Mondays and Fridays at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, coming to you live all the way from Singapore. I try to cut through the lies and misinformation to bring you what you need to know to prepare for the economic horrors that lie ahead. I'll give it to you straight in simple language. I don't sugarcoat the news. Unlike the government and media, I have no agenda other than to make you aware of ways in which you can protect yourselves and your loved ones. That's the Wake Up Call, Mondays and Fridays at 10 a.m. here on Progressive Radio Network.
Progressive Radio Network, your number one source for all things progressive.
Big name marks the beginning of a beautiful friendship, because the stronger my heart gets, the stronger my pen gets.
Hello, I'm Karen Hartglass, and you're listening to It's All About Food. Yes, and I'm here with the very interesting, the very cool, the very healthy... The very green, yeah. I mean, they howl. Hi.
Hey.
Hey.
Talking food.
Talking food, my favorite subject.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so let's talk about pop-ups.
Oh, yes.
What are they?
All
and
right.
How many of them are out here? And how did you... I just have so many questions.
Okay, maybe I can start at the beginning.
But before you talk about pop-ups...
All right, yes.
I want to talk about Pop-Tarts.
Okay.
Because they are a form of pop-ups, but not the kind we're going to talk about.
Okay.
But I realized beforehand when we were talking about breakfast cereals and marketing and stuff, I've been talking about this week... How I remember eating Pop-Tarts and wanting to eat them and thinking it was so much fun to put them in a toaster. I hope you've never eaten them.
I haven't, actually.
And I was going to check it because some of them are probably vegan. I don't even know.
Right.
But I do remember that they didn't taste like anything or they didn't taste very good.
Right.
But yet I wanted them.
They were sweet, though, right?
They were sweet, but the bread pastry, quote, pastry part of them
right.
had this... unusual flavor of like nothing stale, boring chew.
That sounds amazing.
And the fruit
can't believe I had never ate
was
that.
This sugary redness.
Right.
And it really wasn't a good flavor, but I wanted them.
Right.
Because I was marketed to want them.
You were. Yes.
Okay, so let's trash the Pop-Tarts and
yes.
let's get on to healthier pop-ups.
I'm glad you've cleansed yourself of that. the pop-up restaurant culture, I think, kind of stemmed out of the bad economy.
Mm-hmm.
From what I know, it popped up in L.A. first. But the pop-up culture is laden with French chefs.
Oh, oui.
Oh, oui. Oh, oui.
Je ne savais pas.
Oui. Which means, you know, lots of escargot, lots of caviar, lots of foie gras.
Yeah, boo. Is there a French name for pop-up, or is it just pop-up?
It's pop-up. Yes, that's exactly how you say it. So there was there's a bunch of outfits out there who started it, and it trickled into New York, and you know, there's a crew that they did one like on the L train or something like that.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I started getting these emails through my Facebook page, you know, from people, fans and stuff from the page, and they were just like, you should do this pop up thing. And I'm like, what's a pop up? Do my research, whatever. I'm like, oh, this looks interesting. And turns out there was a space, there's a restaurant called LTO, Limited Time Only, down in Chinatown, that has opened as a pop-up concept, where they just rotate chefs.
Oh,
through.
Very cool.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
So I went down, and they were still kind of getting it all together, and I met the guys, and I was like, I want to do a vegan thing. And they were like, all right, we don't have a vegan concept yet. And so I said, all right. So and then I was like, and I asked them how much it costs, and I was like, oh, okay, well, I'm going to have to make some money. So I had to... I had to raise $17,000 to do it. Yeah, it was crazy. So we did a Kickstarter campaign.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the first time I really, like, went into the IEGRASS community and, you know, ask for something, you know, monetary. And the response was really overwhelming. Like, people were really amped about it, and they were really excited to see. Because it was an idea. The idea, so my pop-up was called Wildflower. kind of, you know, a take on IE grass and like a flower that grows and seasonal. I thought it was kind of clever, but anyway.
You know, a name doesn't really have anything to it until the product is something. And then if the product's hot, the name is like, great name.
Exactly, exactly. So we, so Wildflower was, the idea was, I've worked in all these different elements of veganism, these kind of subsets and subcultures. So there's veganism, the umbrella, and you have like the raw vegan, you have like the gluten-free vegans, you have like the junk food vegans.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you have the soul food vegan.
Yeah, macro.
You have like the, you know, all this, the macro, all this stuff, right? So, and I've worked in these, I've had personal clients who, or worked in restaurants. I worked at Jivamukti that was more kind of like the macro, clean kind of food.
Mm-hmm.
But my thing is always flavor. Like, no matter what I'm doing, how can I infuse the flavor into it? But I wanted to bring all these together. That coupled with, like, growing up, how I ate growing up. And I wanted to bring all these together under one umbrella, under one concept. And so Wildflower, we did 3 nights and 2 days. So it was like 5 meals. It had 5 different menus. It was a journey through my professional life, my home life, you know, foods that I like. Each night was 7 courses. We did an a la carte brunch, the waffle brunch, and then we did a Cajun brunch on Saturday. And we saw close to 500 people in 3 days.
Nice.
Coming through. So it was really fun. It was a lot of work. It's a lot of work, but it was really fun. It was really fun to do, and kind of eye opening in a sense that I've even owned my own place in Seattle and worked in different places, but I don't know, you know, it's the whole thing about, you know, New York. Like, if you can pull it off in New York, you can make it there. Exactly, as we're surrounded. So they had the restaurant like put your name up on a marquee and stuff, and I was this is really crazy. So it came off really well, and it just kind of opened my eyes to, I guess, my body of work. You know, there's another saying kind of in the entrepreneurial or, you know, work, you know, world, and they say if you put in your 10 years or your 10,000 hours, you know, you've got something to stand on. And I've I've been in the kitchen for like 12 plus years. Like,
well, running a restaurant, we know, everybody knows, is next to impossible. It's really hard work.
Yeah, it's a hard work.
And you have to be there.
Yeah.
But this pop-up concept, this limited whatever...
Limited time only.
The people that use it, is anyone profiting by doing this other than the people that have the space? Because
LTO profits from it, definitely.
Oh, because I imagine it must be...
Yeah.
That's hard.
I didn't lose any money. I may have made a couple $100. But so it was a very small profit margin. Mm-hmm. It was a big commercial for us. But it was good because I think it, you know, in a traditional restaurant space, I mean, your profit margins are somewhere between like 4 and 8%, 10 if you're really tightening up the bolts on it. So you don't really expect to make a lot of money, but you're more providing a service. I mean, you're providing, you know, an atmosphere, you're providing something. But it, you know, it always, you know, it's a job for people. It's a place for people to come eat. It's a place for you to showcase your food. It's very communal, you know.
Well, I know, I don't know what the percentage is of omnivores versus vegetarians and vegans, but so many of the vegans I know dream about having a restaurant because, you know, we all love food. We love making food and sharing it with people. And there's that, I got to have a restaurant feeling.
Yeah, I think, you know, once you're vegan and you cook, you start to get into so deep into like the herb and the grain, the vegetable kingdom. You're just like, I can be rich from this, you know, if you do it well. But it is a lot of work. I think the pop-up offers, for me, because I've been in restaurants for so long, it was like a way to get in, do my concept, and then be able to kind of walk away from it and not be tied to that, you know, rent and labor and taxes.
Well, do you think you want to open a a permanent place?
I don't think I can escape that. I think that's. I don't think it's up to me. It's no longer up to me. It's happening. I just, you know, to figure out when and where. But yeah, it's in my. I mean, ultimately, my favorite place in anywhere is the kitchen. You know, like I enjoy it. Mm-hmm. I enjoy.
Do your sisters feel that way too, or are they? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. My sisters. My place in Seattle is still there. And now there is three more. One bistro my middle sister runs, another smaller cafe, and then the place my parents. All we do is food. That's mm-hmm. what, this is like what we do. we cook. If there's nobody goes hungry around this family.
Yeah. What are some of the things that are served in that Hillside Quickies vegan sandwich shop?
The crown jewel of the HQVV, whatever it is the Crazy Jamaican Burger. Now, the Crazy Jamaican Burger is one of the first things that I kind of came up with. It's jerk spice tofu, and the burger is made, okay, so from the bottom you have the bottom bun, and then a way that we make our sandwiches, kind of the signature of our sandwich line is potato salad on the sandwich.
Mm.
So you have the bun, you have potato salad, you have this jerk tofu, you have caramelized sweet plantains, caramelized onions.
Oh, my God.
And then you put, like, a little slice of tomato and then some, like, a mayo mustard kind of mix on top. And it's, to this day, still the bestseller.
McDonald's, are you listening?
Are you listening?
Are you listening?
No, I don't want them to come and try to buy me out.
Yeah.
No. We'll just grow on our own. But yeah. So the Crazy Jamaican Burger, the other thing that we really birthed out of there was the mac and cheese, which is our version of macaroni and cheese. It's something that my father came up with, and it's kind of passed down through different hands and tweaked and whatnot into what it is today. But it's a vegan macaroni and cheese. I did the New York Vegetarian Food Festival this year, and I was just selling that there, and got a really good response. People really like that dish.
And so what's the basis for the cheese?
It's nutritional yeast.
Yeah.
Yeah, nutritional yeast is what we use for the cheesy flavor. That's pretty much all I can say about that, too.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Secret ingredient.
Yeah. but I had a whole line of burgers. We did the Flaming Barbecue Burger, which is like a sweet barbecue sauce with raw onion and mustard. I did a Frijole Mole, which is refried beans, kind of a Mexican-flavored tofu with sautéed bell peppers and onions and a mayo conti aioli kind of sauce. What else did we do there? Chili burger.
Is your mouth watering? Mine is.
yeah, I just started this place when I was 20, so I was really into burgers and sandwiches and like greasy food and just like that was, you know, like that's what I was into. So like that's what it was.
All of America's into that.
Right.
The problem is that they're sourcing the stuff for the burger from the wrong things.
Right. Right.
Okay, we don't need factory farms. Please, can we end factory farms now? Where, the numbers keep going up, but 60 billion plus animals every year. Land animals, not those aren't even sea animals,
right,
are killed every year, and most of them are crammed into these filthy factory farms so that they can be ground up and put into burgers.
Right.
And give you heart disease and diabetes and at least 60% of the cancers and a whole host of immune system disorders and obesity and have your bones get weak and on and on and on.
No,
and
there's
on
a
and on.
There's a laundry list. There's definitely a laundry list. I mean, you know, the damage to the ozone layer, the, you know, all sorts of things. And I think you know, somebody pointed out to me a while ago, they said they drove across country and they didn't see any cows.
Right.
Like, there's no cows grazing.
That's right.
You know, they're all in these big, you know, stock houses and stuff. And so, like, it's really kind of changed the landscape of America. I mean, traditionally, America, you know, you go out into the country, you see some wild animals, you see a cow, you see a horse, maybe you see some pigs and stuff like that. But, you know, it's really changed the way that even the youth experience America and the idea of what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think it's just, you know, I try my best to like offer the alternative, because I really believe that like when people see, taste a really good alternative, then you have a choice. You know, but you have to have the choice. If you don't have, if you're not given the choice, then you can't choose.
There's there are some people that believe, especially in the United States of America, where we think we're entitled to everything and freedom is like the thing. We're free to do whatever we want and be whoever we want and say whatever we want, that we shouldn't be denied anything. And I think a lot of people don't even realize that they think they have free thought to some extent, but they don't.
Right.
They're totally marketed, just like I had that Pop-Tart experience. Mm-hmm. People are marketed to think they like certain foods that if they really thought about it, they wouldn't.
Well, and here's the other part about it that I always find interesting is that, you know, most of my friends are carnivores. And, you know, we'll go out to eat, and like 20 minutes later, like doubled over, why did I do that? I'm like, why did you do that? that makes no sense.
But they don't connect the dots.
Right. Or, you know, and then I had a friend, you know, it's people, a lot of my clientele are not vegan.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them are not. And I'm really happy about that. I'm really kind of proud of that because, you know, if... As vegans, we tend to preach to the choir a lot, you know. But, you know, every now and then you got to get the choir to bring in some.
We need
some
new fresh meat.
Yeah, exactly. We need some new ears. But you know, people like just if you can't bring them over if you can't satisfy them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, food is such a visceral like thing, and if you're not, you get up from a meal, you're not satisfied. You can go home and eat something else until
mm-hmm.
you're satisfied. You know, you can go out and be vegan all you want. And, like, I try to tell people, you know, if you find a good place. And see, part of the reason why I have to open a restaurant.
Access,
because I
access,
talk about this, and I'm like, okay, but I'm not going to open a restaurant. So I have to.
Yeah, you have to.
Yeah, I have to. I can't just, you know, offer up things and not do it. But yeah, it's the access to it, but then also, you know, being discerning. Because a lot of, you know, the green market, if you will, has been kind of inundated with a lot of people who just want to make money.
Yeah,
you know,
it's
kind of
diluted, and now it's light green.
Right, exactly. It's very light green. It's very pastel right now. But, you know, getting, kind of trying to steer the momentum towards things that are good. I mean, there are people out there who have been doing it for, like, the amount of time that me and my parents have been doing it. So, you know, there are people with good recipes who know how to handle, you know, tofu, tempeh, seitan, quinoa, like know how to handle grains and proteins and season them. And I always encourage people to find those people in New York. It's like Candle 79, the Soul Veg people kind of in Atlanta and D.C. You know, if you go to Seattle, it's the Hillside Quickie family.
Well, you know, I think we've all kind of evolved together at learning how to handle these foods over the decades, where it started out as the brown rice and steamed veggie things, which is probably one of my favorite things to eat. But
I was at a barbecue at my friend's house, and what was I eating? Brown rice and kimchi. That's all they had, but I was like, this is great. You know? She has some avocado and stuff, too. But
we can get really creative, and we're getting a lot better at it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think that the creativity, but that's part of it. You know, if you think about all business, it's rooted in innovation. You know, everything comes from, like, a need.
Mm-hmm.
You know, every big boom in business comes from a need that is met, you know, from the telecom industry to the railroad industry to, you know, the vegan food industry. You know, there's a need that needs to be met, and as soon as and it's just like finding that tipping point, you know, getting to that tipping point where everything will just kind of change. And I think we'll see a lot more of it. I mean, in the years that I've been alive, I've seen it grow leaps and bounds.
See a lot more of it outside of New York City.
You think so?
I would like to see more.
Oh, you would
of
like
it
to see more. Oh, yeah.
Outside.
Oh, yeah, totally.
New York City is the best place in the world for a vegan.
Mm.
We have more vegan restaurants here than anywhere.
That's true.
And so many of them are really good. Maybe your favorite might be somewhere else, but we've got more of them than anywhere. And if you're thinking about opening a restaurant, New York City is probably Manhattan. I don't even mean the other boroughs. Maybe Brooklyn is a place where you could make a living doing it.
Surely.
But it's the rest of the country that really needs it.
Right. Well, that's why I'm taking Wildflower on the road.
Oh, there we go.
Yes. Actually, that is
my
plan.
You're going to pop up anywhere.
Yeah, my plan for the next one is we may do another. I'm working on like a summer event. Shh, the secret. Shh. Okay, but I'm working on a summer
we
event.
We tell a lot of secrets here. No, we don't tell, but we share a
we
lot
share.
Of secrets.
Yeah, it's
here.
Just us. It's just us. And then I'm also working on one in Toronto at the during the Vegetarian Food Festival they have there.
That's a good town.
Yeah, I mean, there's you know, I've been around the country a couple of times. I know places, you know, and it's tricky because there's places where, like, you might not get anybody, like certain parts of Michigan. A lot of parts of Michigan. Mm-hmm. Not, you know, you're just not going to find a lot of good options. I know that for a fact. You know, but I know I pick on Michigan a lot, but I had a bad experience in Michigan. I think I found some Thai food, maybe, but that was about
yeah, me. Okay.
I stopped by, like, a diner, and I was like, can I get a salad? They're like, what? It was like no, it wasn't romaine. It was iceberg lettuce and tomato.
Well, I don't know about Michigan, but you mentioned it before where this pop-up concept probably came out of the poor economy.
Mm-hmm.
And the bad economies typically generate lots of wonderful entrepreneurial, great new ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where the vegan movement, I think, will really get a foothold. So maybe even
so.
In Michigan,
maybe.
A lot of interesting stuff's happening in and outside of Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
And then there were these urban gardens happening in mm-hmm. vacant lots all over the place. People are mm-hmm. starting to grow their own vegetables.
I mean, I think it would be. I mean, we're looking at you know, I'm making it kind of a project. So I'm looking in it. We're looking at different cities and stuff where it would be fun to go to because they have a vibrant community, and then fun to go to because they don't have a vibrant
mm-hmm.
community like at all.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I reach a lot of people through you know the Facebook page and the Twitter page and stuff. And you know, when I did an appearance on BET's 106 in Park, it was like a kiddie music show. But we got emails from like Mississippi, Kentucky,
wow.
you know,
mm-hmm.
all these southern towns.
Well, there's a lot of individuals looking for
yeah.
community.
Yeah, yeah, exactly, exactly.
Yeah.
And being able to, you know, even if it's us going through a town and, you know, teaching a couple classes, you know, I think that it's, you know, it's definitely just about having the access.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and having the knowledge. And, you know, people, you know, I'll just shoot people a recipe. Like, what can I do? What can I do? What can I do? All right, I'll shoot you my enchilada recipe. You know, just as a start. You know, and then it takes practice, too, though. Like, I didn't just learn how to cook good vegan food.
That's
I've been
right.
doing this for a long time.
And I've been doing it for longer.
Right, exactly. You know, so it takes time to, like, figure out what you're going to, you know,
yep.
how to do it. And it takes a commitment, too.
Yep.
And, I mean, I bless my parents because they're like, they were committed to it. You know, it was hard. They didn't know what they were doing. They didn't, you know, growing up, like, I had, like, knee problems and stuff, and they could have, like, been, oh, it's because he's not drinking
That's
milk.
That's right.
You know, let's give him some milk. But they believed that what they were doing in the long run would be all right. And ultimately it was. And so, like, I always say that, like, this is a path that you choose. And once you choose it, the first thing that comes up is your commitment to it. The first thing is your commitment to it. You know, I mean, I've had not to get too deep in my personal life, but I've had relationships, you know, with women, and they were, you know, I'll be vegan. I'm like, are you sure?
Mm-hmm.
Like, are you good? Because if
well,
you're not
that's
sure.
Well, it's a fine line because
yeah.
you don't want them to be vegan
for me.
For you.
Right.
Because
then
there might be resentment coming on, and then they're going to split, and of course, you
Totes.
Know, or who knows what they're going to do behind your back, et cetera.
Totes. Yeah. So, and it's like, I want you to come to it naturally, you know, and
mm-hmm.
I can lay out all these paths and all these, you know, this is these books, and I can give you everything you need to know, but it ultimately it's up here, it's a mental thing, you know, you have
right.
to get to the space and time in
your
life. You
have to life. Have that aha moment.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You have to have that aha moment. It's like, you know what, I'm not gonna do it anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or I'm gonna stick with it no matter what.
Well, I give your parents a lot of credit. They're really ahead of their time, and that. You mentioning having a particular ailment, and it's so easy for so many people. I've seen it
mm-hmm.
where the doctor says, oh, your child needs dairy.
Mm-hmm.
Their bones are not going to develop mm-hmm. correctly, blah, 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 blah.
Mm-hmm.
And you want the best. I know parents want, most of them,
right.
want the best for their children. It's
yeah.
really hard. And if something had gone wrong, then they really would have had.
It would have, yeah. Yeah, it was a dice roll.
Mm.
But came up seven. Definitely.
Right.
Definitely. But, you know, I think also, like, my father being raised in the South, you know, there's an inherent culture amongst Southern people and, you know, Southern black people where you just kind of use the land, you know. It's like you find this root, oh, you got to burn. Let me put this root on you, baby. That'll be all right. Unless, you know, all this stuff, you just kind of grab from what's around you. So that was kind of there, you know, and yeah. I think that helped.
Well, there's a lot of that, a lot of knowledge that we've lost that we really need to get back.
Right.
A lot of natural cures and things that are right for things.
Well, all medicine, you know, is derived from a natural source. It's just more instant when it's in a pill form.
And you can make money off of it.
Exactly. Well, there. That part, too.
Okay. That is the part.
Yeah.
Now I have a question. Do you take B12?
I take B12 sometimes. I don't like, go crazy with it. You know?
Right.
I have a bottle at home. And, like,
When you remember.
I remember. Yeah, I'll throw a couple under my tongue. No big deal.
Right.
But, yeah.
I ask that because, okay, B12 is this... vitamin. It's actually a bacteria. It grows in soil, and we are living in a more sterile society now, and people, not just vegetarians and vegans, but meat eaters as well, have B12 deficiencies, and it's something that can really wreak a lot of havoc if you don't know that you have it. You can get tingling in your legs, you can get blindness and all kinds of dementia, a whole host of things, and it's recommended now that absolutely vegans should supplement with B12 because meat eaters get B12 from the guts of animals who get the B12 from the dirt and the ground and everywhere else. It doesn't come naturally from animals. From the middle mammal. Exactly. Anyway, but we can easily get it from a pill. So I was just wondering, because if your parents... were vegan for a long time, and then they had you. What was your B12 scene like?
Yeah. Well, you know, my B12 got a little out of hand as a
and
teenager.
And then I just have one more question. We only really have a minute or so left, but a lot of people recommend that when a woman is pregnant and she's vegan and she's having a baby, that she supplement with DHA, and there are vegan forms of DHA from algae, and a lot of other people supplement with fish oil, and it's supposed to affect your neurological development. I don't know what your mother did, but do you have any feeling about DHA or knowledge, et cetera?
I have some feelings.
Because you look
smart. Well, I have some feelings and I have some knowledge, but I don't give out advice about people under 12 or pregnant people because it's just,
It's not your space.
Yeah, it's
okay,
not my, my feeling. But, yes, they're, my mother just... was, again, did a lot of research, read a lot of books, kept herself healthy, you know, supplemented everything that she needed to supplement with, and, you know, became and had a healthy pregnancy.
Yeah, well, you're looking good.
Well, thank you.
Okay, Ayinde Howell of IEatGrass.com, thank you so much. This has really been fun, and I really look forward to tasting some of, like, that jerk burger or something.
Yes.
Yeah, invite me over.
All right, cool.
Okay, I'm Karen Hartglass, and you've been listening to It's All About Food. Please go to my new website, responsibleeatingandliving.com. Like us on Facebook, and have a delicious week. We'll be right back.